This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 198. Holy majoli crapatoli. I'm sure that's Italian. And so, minus two. Episode 200 minus two of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is brought to you by CanvasPeople.com. CanvasPeople.com lets you take your favorite photo memories and turn them into beautiful artwork.
I am still gushing over the first print we got. And I say we because Summer and I had to get, we didn't have to. I chose to get the same one, but it was her photo. But we're so in love with it still. Every time I look at that image, it takes me back right to that Scottish Glen, the Kilmartin Glen from 2015 to the day you took the picture.
Their 11 by 14 photo to canvas prints are normally $69, but now they are having a limited time offer where you can get one 11 by 14 print free. You just pay shipping.
So go to canvaspeople.com and use promo code Outlander to get your favorite photo turned into an 11 by 14 work of art. Just pay shipping.
That's canvaspeople.com and use the promo code Outlander. And now on to our read-along. This week, we will be discussing two chapters. Chapter 51, in which Jamie smells a rat, is what we'll begin with. And dude, we're finishing part 8 tonight. Can you believe that?
Like chapter 51, 52, that's like, we only have, there's only 63 chapters in this book. We're getting to the end, people.
That just makes me nervous because you said there's only 60 something chapters in the book. We're already finishing 52 tonight. I'm worried about the fact that if you say there's only 60-something chapters left, there's a whole lot of book left. In my hand. That means there's at least one 50-page chapter coming up.
Some of them, I'm not going to lie, are monsters. They're monsters. That's why we're doing a lot of combining, because there are many that we can't. So before we get started, I think we have someone who chose chapter 51 to join us on.
Did she choose 51 or did she choose 52?
Nope, she chose 51.
And you made her come for 52?
I'm pretty sure it was 52.
Because your name is on our thing for 51. So it's possible that it was put in the wrong folder. But that would make sense because that's the sexy chapter.
I was going to say.
Absolutely.
I was like, did she pick
her? Hands down.
Did she pick the sexy chapter or did the sexy chapter pick her?
It's hands down my favorite chapter in the whole series.
Are you kidding?
Nope.
Out of 8 books?
Out of 8 books.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Yay. So I'm glad you came out of the woodwork, girl, and took this one.
I'll take one for the team.
All right, I super hope that you get half as uncomfortable as Ginger's about to be. I heard she's already drinking whiskey to get ready for some of our listener comments.
It's 11:45 here. There ain't no way I'm drinking whiskey.
Yeah. So to begin with chapter 51, Anne S. writes, "All I could think of was how hard it is to find your spouse at Costco with cell phones, let alone looking for someone in the Bahamas." That is a lot of ocean and many islands to cover. I am just going to suspend disbelief here and move on.
That's a really fun analogy.
It is. It's like,
there might be a lot of coincidences in these books.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. Just a lot. Yeah, I mean, just a million or so. Yeah.
I have a hard time finding an item I'm looking for at Costco that's in the same place every time I go there. And finding a parking spot at Costco, that's like the Thunderdome. It's trying to find any of those things is very on par with trying to find your spouse in the middle of the sea, in the middle of the West Indies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good times. I don't like Costco that much, but the samples are fun.
I have a problem finding batteries that I just bought and put away a month ago in my own apartment. So
your apartment is not that big. You're not.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. That's how sad it is. Okay, so Jamie is aboard the Porpoise. And we're like, wait, excuse me, what? What just happened? Eileen P. writes, well, of course Jamie managed to sneak aboard the Porpoise. He must rescue Claire. Too bad Claire's no longer there. Unfortunately, Captain Leonard informs Jamie that Claire jumped overboard and must have drowned. Great. Now Jamie thinks Claire is dead. And Claire, after learning that Jamie is on the Porpoise, thinks Jamie will be hanged. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, question.
Yeah.
And this is an adaptation question. No one really knows the answer to this. And no one will until we see it. But it's just a question. What do you think they're going to do? Because this is kind of happening concurrently with things that are happening in previous chapters. Do you think they're going to splice these things together? Is it going to be even more of a narrow miss?
I think you'll see it. I think you'll see it happening, you know, the way they edit the episodes and the events occur. Or although it could be a cliffhanger. You never know when they'll do a cliffhanger ending.
Another Jamie in the window.
Mm-hmm.
He could.
I think it was had to be 51 because 52 is not really cliffhangery. 52 is really sweet, right? So it ends really sweetly. So 51, I think that's 51's an excellent cliffhanger ending of a chapter. So right. That would be a very good possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very interesting too that, you know, this is really the first point at which Jamie has thought Claire was dead.
Mm.
You know, because always before when she was gone, he knew she was in the future. But so he's experiencing for right now what Claire experienced for the last 20 years.
So the situation, although he's very sad and worried and scared and all of that, is comical. So Jamie had snuck aboard. He'd memorized the layout of a man of war to the best of his ability, getting this information from some crew among the Artemis. Some people had actually served him aboard. Whatever. And he needed to make his way to the surgeon's quarters. Even though she may not hang out there all the time, he knew ultimately she'd have to come back there at some point. So someone had rowed Jamie out after dark, and the plan was to find Claire, get her off the boat, and then swim ashore together. The Artemis would be waiting. And he followed, once he was aboard, he followed this is so romantic. How did you find me, Jamie? I followed the smell of sickness. He followed the smell of sickness to find Claire, at least to try. And he's not finding her.
So what I love about the audio medium is that there are so many English words. They sound exactly the same when you hear them out loud. But when you read them, you can tell that they are different words. When you just said someone rode him, I was not envisioning a boat.
No, I had the same thought. Oh, I could think it was lucky someone.
I was like, wow. I'd like that job.
Sorry, it was me. I didn't tell y'all. I didn't want you to get embarrassed because I am a good swimmer. So, you know, I float really well. I'm just kidding. Oh, Lord. Lisa T. writes, Jamie says, bloody woman, he says under his breath, where have you gone, you fascist wee Heidi? No, fascist meaning troublesome, as in dinna fash. Now, Jamie is clearly worried. So hours later, after he's been looking and looking and looking, there is no sign of Claire. He's worried that she'd actually gotten sick and been tossed overboard. And he smells goats all of a sudden, and that smell surprised him. And as he's looking, he heard a woman's voice. Now, he realized he'd already lost his chance for rendezvous with the Artemis, so he was stuck on the boat until he decided to somehow, you know, leave. He goes to find the owner of that female voice, and when he gets to where she is, he sees there's a man with her. It's the one-eyed seaman. Now, he's shocked at seeing Jamie there himself, of course. Now, Jamie does not recognize him because he never confronted him before, and he tries to back away. The one-eyed dude, but Jamie grabs him and he asks him about Mrs. Malcolm. After some convincing, he tells Jamie that she's lost. She'd gone overboard. Lisa T. writes, loss is the very same word that he used to Lord John when he referred to Claire's absence after Culloden. The word brings back so much terror for Jamie. And as he, Tompkins, gets away from Jamie, he says not to worry, that he'll join her in hell soon, at the end of a rope, of course. And then Jamie barely notes the sound of footsteps behind him before he's knocked down. Now, when Jamie comes to, he remembers that he's on a ship and looking for Claire and that she's lost, drowned, dead. and someone comes into the room where he is being held captive, and it happens to be Captain Leonard. Now, Captain Leonard apologizes for what happened to him and saying, "I'm so sorry," blah, blah, blah. Jamie attacks him, and then he is jumped and again knocked unconscious. Anne S. writes, "Jamie gets knocked out a lot in this chapter, and it makes me wonder. Number one, how many men does it take to move an unconscious 6'4" Highlander? Two, how easy is it to knock someone out by hitting them on the head? You see it all the time in TV and movies, but it seems much less certain in real life. More likely to just make someone angry. And three, how did he go from lights out to waking up on the beach? He must tell Claire about it later." Well, we come to find out about that in a little bit. Lisa T. writes, "It's not unlike after Culloden when he realizes that Claire is gone." So, Mandy, the listeners, readers agree with you.
Well, I mean, he knows she's gone, but he doesn't really think she's dead.
Exactly.
Well, the sad part is that because she's potentially now lost at sea, I feel like it would be an even worse fate to not have ever found her body. Because then he might never truly believe that she was gone. You know, some people need to see the dead body. That's what I'm saying. That would be his new life. That would be the rest of the series.
He would never
that would
stop
be a
looking.
Very strange and awkward. Eight more books of Jamie just going from island to island.
Well, it could be one of the four spinoffs like Game of Thrones is going to have.
Imagine. Okay, well, now I know that just because they have something maybe going on, there's no guarantee at all for Outlander. I hear you. And to me, the most important thing is to hopefully get all the books. However, if we get all the books and there were spinoffs, I mean, what do you do? The easiest, most one that makes the most sense would be the Lord John books. But other than that, what do they do? I mean, how do you make a spinoff? How do you make a spinoff of the Bulges?
Mm-hmm. Lord John is going to weigh very heavily upon how well
he's received.
Is received.
That's true.
If,
oh,
if they
dude,
don't like
Summer.
Him,
oh,
I mean, no. He's in it for the next for the duration. He's
in it.
What is not to like about David Barry?
Have you seen him in A Place to Call Home? He's amazing.
My point is, we get that. I get that. You get that. I'm just stating they won't greenlight anything extemporaneous on the side without testing the waters the actor first. So, I mean, I still vote 100%. I want a Master Raymond spinoff, and I want a Brian and Ellen. That's what I vote.
You can have one-offs. That's true. Like, you can have a single series. Like, that, I don't know. I guess it's still considered a spinoff because it's branched off. So that is, if that's the definition of a spinoff, then yes, I would like a Master Raymond. I'd like the Brian and Ellen. I like the Frank thing. However, when I think of spinoff, and this is not, I understand that I'm narrowly defining this, and that's not wholly correct. It's not the whole definition of what that is. When I think of spinoff, I think of a series. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be a multiple season series. Well, that's what series means. Series means, you know, more than one, typically more than two. But anyway, series, like fodder for content for multiple seasons of something, the only thing that makes sense would be George Lawn. Lord John.
That's not a thing.
It is with whiskey.
Okay, but you know what? This is what I'm going to say about, yes, Lord John, they've already got everything written. All they have to do is take it and do what they've done with the rest of the things. However, if they have a group of writers who want a little more freedom, they could grab onto something like Master Raymond's story and take it back 20, 30, 50, 70, however many years. I don't know how old the dude is. Point is, you could take that back very far in the past, hire a completely different actor it's not dependent upon whether or not that one particular actor is available or if...
Don't get me wrong. I would never say no to any spinoff ever of this. However, remember when we were speaking with Tara Bennett, who wrote the Outlander, basically the coffee table book, right? The World of Outlander. We asked her about people who weren't included really in that. Not that they weren't excluded, but they couldn't be included because of they're very busy. And he was, Dominique Pignon was one of them. He's such a highly renowned and highly sought after actor in France, well, all over the world, but he's a French actor, right. That it was just schedule-wise, it didn't work. And so I think that's why you're saying that if even if they had to get someone else, still do it. So the content is more important than the actor. I don't disagree. But it would break my heart if they did it. I would be happy. But it would break my heart a tiny bit if they didn't include him. But for someone who's that busy, I can't see. I mean, they got him to do a season of, good chunk of the season.
It wouldn't bother, the reason it wouldn't bother me is if they did it in one specific way. And that specific way I'm speaking of is if they made him significantly younger. And then he could have, you know, young enough that he's having romantic pursuits and he's gallivanting around the countryside or whatever he as a character is doing. I don't know, because I don't know enough of his backstory outside of this Outlander universe that we're in.
He's time traveling.
Right. So he could do, oh my God, it's like Quantum Leap. He could be Quantum Leap, but he could be, you know, doing his whole thing. But they could have a completely different actor to cover.
Well, especially
time.
If he's younger, that would not mean, not that I'm in charge of anything, but that I could absolutely go for that. Number one, I would like anything they give us. And number two, then in that case, not having the same actor would not only not bother me, it would make sense. So in case Stars needs to know anything from us, we give you our blessing. We would love it. And I hope that like Stars, if someone does do it, and I'm thinking that they kind of Stars/Sony basically owns the Outlander universe, basically. I don't think anyone else would be doing it unless they, you know, paid a lot of money to do so. So it would likely be on Stars or something. Or I guess one of the family of Sony people.
Just because it's Master Raymond doesn't mean it has to be an Outlander universe. I bet Dinah still holds those rights. Because basically that book's not published yet, so they can't have optioned it.
Very true.
It's not already existing, then no.
I like to think that because of the working relationship she has with Stars, she'd give them the first, or Sony, that she'd give them first go at it.
Oh, I'm sure they would, but I'm just saying. I'd like to know what the Comte de Saint-Germain is up to.
Ooh. Dude, wouldn't you? Only if we got the same dude. Oh my gosh.
Stanley, the weirdest Frenchman's name.
Only if we got Stanley Weber.
Totally.
You had quite the gift on Instagram this week.
Oh, what was that?
Well, now I have to go to Instagram.
Uh-oh. What was his gift?
I don't know. I really want it to be a...
Oh, you didn't see the full moon picture?
Oh, gosh.
Hang on.
No, wrong side.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a big gift. That's the gift of fivefold. I need to be in Sedona, Arizona. Wow. Well, I don't even understand these pictures. Why do people do that?
Kept on giving.
I hear that's really popular right now.
Oh, I did too. Like, Mooney doing
no, I'm with you
a
there.
Butt selfie.
Well, it's like, it's people going to beautiful locations and having a picture of their butt hanging out.
I don't know, but I'm not above admiring.
Butt shot with a beautiful background. It's like they're fighting for focus. What do I look at? Everything's so beautiful.
Okay, well, let's get back to the chapter. So, Jamie is woken up by a spider on his face.
Just one second. Does anyone notice that he was on the Pacific Coast Highway 8 hours ago? Why are we not going there right now?
I did.
Because we're recording, and I have work tomorrow.
That's our state. It's here. It's right here.
So Jamie is woken up by a spider on his face. Okay, stop it right there. I would lose my everything. Can you imagine?
You would lose your batteries from Costco that you don't know where they are.
I didn't get them from Costco, but yeah. I would, no, not lose my batteries. I already lost the batteries.
He's a big, tough Highlander. He's had worse things than spiders on his face.
He has, but he still freaks out. And he hears the laughter of children, and they're speaking French. So Jamie, you know, as a French speaker, starts the chat with him. And he tells him that he's a soldier. And one of the young ladies tells him that, and he's asking, like, where were they? And he says they're at Cap Haitien, which is, I think, Cape Haiti. Is that right? Haiti. Yeah. Cape Haiti. So on the island of Hispaniola. Now, Jamie's memory begins to come back. He remembers swimming for his life, the rain on his face, and then he remembers the rat-faced seaman, Tompkins, and Claire. Oh, he remembers being left in the brig, hearing the sound of the storm, and being tossed around by stormy seas, nothing to hold on to, when the door to his room was opened by a woman. And this woman had gotten him up to the deck, and as she pushes him to the rail, said to him, "She is not dead. She go there, you go too. Find her."
All right, side note. I've been telling everyone since day one this is my favorite book in the Outlander series. Ginger is slowly and methodically making this my least favorite book in the Outlander series by continuing to use the word seaman when she could say sailor.
Oh, Lord. Summer.
Every
damn I am reading time. Diana's. I'm reading Diana's word, so it's not me.
Lord, hairy semen, one-eyed semen. I mean, there's every variety of semen in the world, and you have mentioned them in our podcast weekly.
Well, just wait till later books. You get a whole nother kind of semen.
Oh, Lord.
Pirates.
Eileen P. writes, wow, that Annika is strong. She just hauled Jamie Fraser over the rail during a hurricane. It's bad enough Claire had to endure the hurricane for on top of the tree on shore. Jamie had to be in the ocean. Thankfully, he makes it to shore intact. So it's coming back to Jamie that the children around him are looking, they're looking at ships in the harbor and asking about their provenance. And Jamie confirms that, one, that the porpoise, he sees it out there, is indeed English. One of the boys exclaims, one for me, that's four for me this month and only two for you this month, like a neener neener, to Jacques. And Jacques replies, that's three. I get Spanish and Portuguese. Bruja was Portuguese, so I can count that too. Now Jamie hears this, and I hope the reader sees this, and is like, double take, excuse me, what? We find out that the Bruja was in port last week. The ship was going to Bridgetown. The children convinced Jamie to come with them to see their maman, who owns a tavern frequented by seafaring people. And that's how they kind of found some of this information out. As they make their way to the tavern, Jamie is thinking that maybe the goat woman had meant that Claire had gone overboard too, on purpose. And that she was on this island somewhere as well. And knowing the Bruja was there, we know that young Ian is not too far either. And finally, Eileen P. writes, it's easy to forget young Ian and the Bruja during Jamie and Claire's adventures on the high seas. Nice surprise to learn they are not far behind.
That was 51.
And that was chapter 51. We are now moving on to 52, which is arguably, I think, one of the funniest chapters.
Oh my God. I couldn't stop laughing.
Entitled, A Wedding Takes Place.
Thank you, Santa Claus. Oh my gosh, that was embarrassing.
I think that's what they've been filming the last couple of days in South Africa.
Oh, because of all the beach stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Back on the beach. They had to repair the Artemis. Claire does her best to not think about Jamie and the possibilities of what may have happened to him. She takes Marsali up to the house, at, of course, the Hacienda de la Fuente, and Stern helps with the labor of repairing the ship. And Claire was in charge of searching the jungle for any new specimen that Stern might want to collect. When she comes back from one of these trips, she notices that the Artemis is quite far along, and they hope to launch that evening. And then soldiers arrive. Fergus reacts first and tells Claire and Marsali to get into the woods. They collapse behind a tree in hiding. Marsali is worried about Fergus. There were only about 10 soldiers, and they are French. But there's always, with any kind of, even though they're working on it, with any kind of crash. It's not really a crash. What do you call it again? Shipwreck, right? With any kind of shipwreck, there's always the danger of salvage, of people coming up and just, you know, taking it away and claiming things for themselves. Fergus acts as spokesman for the group, of course, given that he's French, and Claire watches his face as it changed. It froze and whitened beneath his tan. And she looked at the soldier coming toward them, and she kind of freaks out. Diana says she's super thankful, and Marsali gasps, and the reader's like, the huh? And Claire claps her hand over Marsali's mouth to keep her from attracting attention to them. And the commander of these troops takes off his hat, and he shakes out his auburn mane, and he grins at Fergus. Of course, it can only be our Jamie Fraser. Now, Jamie continues speaking in French, and he asks if Fergus is in charge, and then tells him, come with me. The rest steer where you are. Don't talk. Jamie and Fergus speak privately away from the others, and when they were done, Fergus went back to the ship. Jamie told the soldiers to dismount and gather round. Fergus announces, these are soldiers from the garrison at Cap Haïtien. Their commander, Captain Alessandro, says that they will assist us in launching the Artemis, unquote. The crew is trying not to out Jamie, all the while mind-boggled. Soldiers and crewmen alike begin to right the Artemis. Fergus has the men singing and directs them in their work.
Is Alessandro Spanish version? Is it Italian?
Italian.
Okay. So it's the Italian version of Alexander?
Yes, and then the Spanish, what I think the Spanish and Portuguese are probably
Alejandro.
Exactly.
Alejandro, okay. Lady Gaga sang a song about that.
Am I the only one that hopes that, you know, they have this description describes him as having a short curly beard, and that with the show they do a little bit better job with the beard than in Faith?
No Faith Merkins. No Faith Merkins.
Oh my gosh. A little bit better job? You're being facetious, right? A lot better job. That was Pube City. Bad. I'm sorry.
It was chin pubes. Yes. Like I said. But they weren't his, so I'm calling them a Merkin.
Eileen P. writes, Jamie Fraser amazes me. How does he manage to end up being Captain Alessandro? Finding Claire and the Artemis? Having the soldiers help fix the Artemis and then have them captured? Jamie Fraser is Superman. And Martina P. writes, Jamie arrives in command of French soldiers, and since being back on land, he is back to his usual Jamie-ness, full of cleverness and strategic thinking. How he managed to command French soldiers into repairing the wrecked ship and making it seaworthy again is beyond me, but typical Jamie stuff, and I love it. So Claire and Marsali are staying in hiding. After a long while, she sees Jamie head for the tree line, probably to take a whiz, and of course that's what he does. So Claire tells Marsali to wait, and she goes to meet Jamie. She surprises him, and he has to yell. He makes like such a ruckus or such a like scream that he has to yell to one of the sentries who's on duty that it was only a snake, all is well, I'm okay. And once the sentry left the area, he turned to Claire, and he gets after her for jumping overboard, and she gets after him for coming after her. Of course, they have a little kissy, but she asks him, what are you doing here? And he won't share what his plans are just yet. He tells Claire and Marsali to stay hidden, and then he heads back to the beach, but quickly returns and hugs and kisses her and says, I forgot, I love you, and I'm glad you're not dead. Didn't do that again, unquote.
I like that moment. And
that's the first time I laugh out loud in the chapter.
Agreed. Like, because he's like, oh, I'm so mad at you, blah, blah, blah. And he starts to walk away and he's like, oh, but in case that, don't misunderstand, I'm super glad you're not dead because whatever. But I'll be back. Bye.
Anne S. writes, back to Claire. She is hiding in the trees. And when Jamie finds her, he feels her. And Marsa, he feels her. He does not feel her. Not yet. Sam is hiding in the trees. Sam. Now I'm bringing Sam into this. What the heck?
He will be hiding in the trees.
Well, first I'm riding Jamie out to the porpoise.
As then, one does.
And one does. And then I'm bringing in Sam to the bushes. Trees.
As
sorry.
One also does. Straight into the bushes.
Anne S. writes, back to Claire. She is hiding in the trees. And when Jamie finds her, he tells her and Marsali to stay put. And then he kisses her. And shock. She listens. She stays put. That must have been some kiss, Jamie Fraser. Because Claire don't stay. We know this. Claire don't stay and Claire don't shut up. So Joe B. writes, Jamie and Claire don't do romantic reunions, really. One of them is usually injured, disheveled, or in an embarrassed situation. Her first look at Jamie in 20 years is of him leaning over a printing press. This time, it's when he's taking a pee. It's funny, but hardly dignified. In the captain's cabin, another attempt to reunite is interrupted, and we'll get there soon. Can't help but think that if they'd stopped talking for so many pages, something could have been achieved. That's like me. Oh my gosh, I talk. But not with Jamie.
No. So is that what you're saying, Ginger? That all that you've needed all these years is some man to kiss you into silence?
Oh, shut up.
Is that the key? I need to find a man for you to kiss you into silence.
Oh, shut up, sir. They waited and waited. And they fell asleep. And then Marsali wakes Claire when they are about to launch the ship. Then the men all boarded it, including the French soldiers. And then Claire's like, dude, we've had enough. Whatever the men are doing, they have to have done it by now. Fergus comes to the beach, and they run out on the beach toward the ship. Fergus comes out to meet them and says that the French soldiers had been taken prisoner. Fergus says to Claire, Milady, the captain of the Artemis, desires you will honor him with your company over supper, unquote. Lisa T. writes, one of my all-time favorite scenes follows. It's so funny and deeply erotic. Mandy.
seriously, it's not only my favorite scene in this series, I think it's the best written sex scene of any book I've ever read, considering there's no actual sex involved. So
I would have to agree.
It just goes to show you that it's not the act of sexual intercourse that makes for romance and feeling. It's the actual, you know, you generate the feelings with the words. It's not the acts that are occurring.
Exactly. So back aboard the ship, she goes to see Jamie. He's naked, scratching his balls, as you do, and he hugs her. She's not sure about the look, but thinks she may like the beard. He doesn't, and he tells her that he has lice, but he's gonna shave it.
His, like, bedroom talk is, like, not his best thing right now. But this whole scene dissolves into the weirdest, like, 1-900 phone call.
Yeah.
But they're in the same room looking at each other the whole time, which is so odd. Weird. I can't imagine that being. I'm like, just do it. Why are we talking about it?
So she admires his beard and tells him, because of course he hasn't, well, most likely, and he hasn't seen himself in a mirror. He just knows he's got a lot of growth. And she tells him that he's got silver shot through his beard. He tells her how they captured the French soldiers. And then Maitland comes in with the hot water. Now, when they're discussing all the things the captain does and negotiating how much of what type of alcohol to give people, Jamie says, "Make it so, Mr. Maitland." Did anyone else get that reference?
I guess not.
Make it so?
No, I don't know what you're referring to.
Anne S. writes, "When someone asks Captain Alessandro, Italian for Alexander, about the grog orders, and Jamie says, make it so, I was geeking out, wondering who said it first, Jamie or Jean-Luc Picard." It's a Star Trek reference. Now, I don't know if Diana did that on purpose, if it's actual captain speak, but it's definitely from Star Trek. Lisa T. writes, "The thought of Jamie as captain of a ship is humorous and ironic. And Mr. Maitland is also to send Mr. Willoughby to tend Jamie as well. And Claire also asks for vinegar to kill the lice. And she asks him, please, not to shave his beard, at least not just yet. And he comes closer to her and starts to kiss her all over. Now, he tells her that they may stay here one more night so that they can go to land and have a nice night together there. And he's been planning this. He describes how he'll take her to a private spot and then do things to her in detail, step by step. And here's what Summer I was referring to about what Lisa T wrote.
All right, Lisa.
Lisa T writes, and I didn't write down her comment, but she did say before she wrote this or copied it, "I'm going to include it and hope Ginger reads it."
Yes. She asked to read it if somebody else writes it. That's the best part.
Okay, so I'm not going to say quote because it will make me bonkers. So this is all dialogue, so it's too many quotes. I'm just going to read it. "And sleep ashore where there's room." "Room for what?" I asked, regarding him with suspicion. "Well, I have it planned, he said, sloshing water over his face with both hands. "You have what planned?" I asked. He snorted and shook the excess water from his beard before replying. "I have been thinking of this for months now," he said with keen anticipation. "Every night, folded up in that godforsaken nutshell of a berth, listening to Fergus grunt and fart across the cabin. I thought it all out, just what I would do. Did I have you naked and willing? No one in hearing, and room enough to serve you suitably." He lathered the cake of soap vigorously between his palms and applied it to his face. "Well, I'm willing enough," I said, intrigued. "And there's room, certainly. As for naked, I'll see to that," he assured me. "That's part of the plan, I shall take you to a private spot, spread out a quilt to lie on, and commence by sitting down beside you." "Well, that's a start, all right," I said. "What then?" I sat down next to him on the berth. He leaned close and bit my earlobe very delicately. "As for what next, then I shall take you on my knee and kiss you." He paused to illustrate, holding my arm so I couldn't move. He let go a minute later, leaving my lips slightly swollen, tasting of ale, soap, and Jamie. "So much for step one," I said, wiping soap suds from my mouth. "What then?" "Then I shall lay you down upon the quilt, twist your hair up in my hand, and taste your face and throat and ears and bosom with my lips," he said. "I thought I would do that until you start making squeaking noises." "I don't make squeaking noises. "Aye, you do," he said. "Here, hand me the towel, aye." "Then," he went on cheerfully, "I thought I would begin at the other end. I shall lift up your skirt and..." His face disappeared into the folds of the linen towel. "And what?" I asked, thoroughly intrigued. "And kiss the insides of your thighs where the skin's so soft. The beard might help there, aye?" He stroked his jaw, considering. "It might," I said, a little faintly. "What am I supposed to be doing while you do this?" "Well, you might moan a bit, if you like, to encourage me, but otherwise, you just lie still." He didn't sound as though he needed any encouragement whatever. One of his hands was resting on my thigh, and he used the other to swab his chest with a damp towel. As he finished, the hand slid behind me and squeezed. "My beloved's arm is under me," I quoted, "and his hand behind my head. Comfort me with apples and stay me with flagons, for I am sick of love." There was a flash of white teeth in his beard. "More like grapefruit," he said, one hand cupping my behind. "Or possibly gourds. Grapefruit are too small."
And this is where he lost me in his bedroom talk.
"Gourds," I said indignantly. "Gourds?
Exactly." And she rightfully said it indignantly. "Have you seen a gourd?"
"Oh, they're
many
ginormous.
Gourds have a very many gourds have a very lovely round end, but they all have a tapered weird
shape."
It's never just a round gourd. It's like a gourd that's kind of long and oblong with a weird curvy neck. Like, I've never seen a gourd that was just round ever. They probably exist, and I'm sure there's going to be a listener who sends me a picture of one
that looks like a butt.
That looks like a butt,
or at least one shape.
But yeah,
but well,
my imagining of a gourd is the ones you see that are all like have like they look like they've got witch's warts all over them, and they're ones
or they're like scalloped.
Yeah, like those are not what I would want my butt to feel like to somebody. I would not want my butt described as a gourd.
"Well, wild gourds get that big sometimes," he said. "But that's next." He squeezed once more, then removed the hand in order to wash the armpit on that side. "I lie upon my back and have you stretched at length upon me so that I can get hold of your buttocks and fondle them properly." He stopped washing to give me a quick example of what he thought proper, and I let out an involuntary gasp. "Now," he went on, resuming his ablutions, "should you wish to kick your legs a bit or make lewd motions with your hips and pant in my ear at that point in the proceedings, I should have no great objection. I do not pant." "Aye, you do. Now about your breasts. Oh, I thought you'd forgotten those." "Never in life," he assured me. "No," he went blithely on. "That's when I take off your gown, leaving you in naught but your shift." "I'm not wearing a shift." "Oh, well, no matter," he said, dismissing this. "I meant to suckle you through the thin cotton till your nipples stood hard in my mouth and then take it off, but it's no great concern. I'll manage without it. So, allowing for the absence of your shift, I shall attend to your breasts until you make that wee bleating noise." "I don't, and then," he said, interrupting, "since you will, according to the plan, be naked and, provided I've done it right so far, possibly willing as well." "Oh, just possibly," I said. My lips were still tingling from step one. "Then I shall spread open your thighs, take down my breeks, and..." He paused, waiting. "And," I said obligingly. The grin widened substantially. "And we'll see what sort of noise it is you don't make then, Sassenach."
I would like to officially make Lisa T the MVP of this podcast. I think we need to make this an award for every podcast for listeners' contributions, because that was the most amazing, like, 5-minute stretch of Ginger reading straight from the book that I have ever had to listen to. I almost want you to do it again.
No,
you did a very good job.
I need to be reimbursed for that. Thank you. And I had no accents either. I think it would distract, since I don't do the Scottish one very well. So Lisa continues, "He doesn't touch Claire a lot in this scene, but it is so intimate, erotic, and so damn funny. The wee bleeding noises just slays me every time. As I say, it's so funny, but it's really intimate. And Jamie clearly pays attention to Claire's responses during sex. I also love that, quote, allowing for the absence of your shift, unquote, Jamie is most flexible in his fantasy." The scene goes to the heart of their relationship. Jamie, as we have seen him do before, is reclaiming Claire. In this scene, he is reclaiming her physically and sexually. He has done this He has done this in Outlander after he tosses her, and again in Dragonfly and Amber after she lost Faith. In that scene, he threatened to beat her with nettles, so it's not a surprise that he threatens to beat her senseless here. Each of these instances come after they have been separated, and Jamie is filled with emotion. He needs release.
Yes, he does.
That line, and then we'll see what kind of noise you don't make then. That's my favorite line. I just, at that point, I'm cracking up every time I read it.
Well, sure. Because it's like, it takes everything that, he's been pitching his story for the last, three pages. And that is his summation moment where he's just like, it's almost like the closing argument of a lawyer. Where he's being kind of interrupted, but he's like, I'm laying out exactly what I plan to do, and you've interrupted me, but now that you've interrupted me, we'll see exactly what you said you don't do. We'll see. We'll see what you do.
Yeah.
Martina P. writes, oh dear God, the Jamie and Claire scene in the captain's quarters. It must be the most erotic scene I have read on paper. What a delightful dialogue and the funny description of all the noises Claire doesn't make. Incredibly steamy and hot with absolutely no sex taking place. Only Diana has the know-how to pull this off. It is fascinating and incredibly intimate. Two people who know each other that well. Our Jamie Fraser has come a very long way since being a virgin bridegroom. However, he was a natural and talented student from the very beginning. And Eileen P. writes, Claire and Jamie's reunion on the Artemis is the best sex scene without actually having sex. And that's what Mandy said. They are interrupted by Mr. Willoughby, and Jamie asks him to, to take the clothing and have it burned, and, you can come back later. Claire has told him of Stern and Arabella and the priest, but they are interrupted again, and this time it's Marsali. Now, she says that she requires him to keep his promise, that they could be wed in the Indies, and they are in the Indies. Jamie says they will, but they need the priest, and Marsali reminds him that they have a priest, Father Fogden. Yes, Marsali is sure she wants this. So Jamie says, okay, get Stern, and tell Fergus to get ready. Before she leaves, she asks Claire about a special soap to wash her hair. And then Claire thinks to get one of the nice dresses for her to be married in. The ones of that name it's not the easiest name to pronounce. I don't even, it's not written down, so I'm not going to try. It starts with an E, and it's kind of long.
Ermengilda.
Thank you. That one. She asks him to tell Stern to ask the priest. Now, Jamie is perplexed at this priest. Quote, well, she replies, he drinks a bit, and he's rather fond of sheep, but he might remember the words to the wedding ceremony. Unquote.
He's really the only choice in their location. But that being said, he's also having read the wedding as it happens several times in my lifetime. He's the best choice.
Oh my god. I cannot wait to see who they cast. The two out of this chapter, granted, I know there's all kinds of stuff that we want. I know this, but if they keep like most or all of the dialogue of that scene that Diana wrote that I just read, that I can't touch Davina with a 10-foot pole, but that scene, right? That almost verbatim. She gives you such richness, but if not verbatim, almost. If they keep that, and holy crap, if they keep the wedding scene similar, oh my God, it's magic. It is freaking comedic magic. It's too much. It's gold. It's gold.
Yeah, I agree. Because to me, it's the humor that makes Outlander so special.
Yes, Mandy, absolutely. I agree with that.
Well, it's the humor that takes it, that elevates it, I should say, above the costume drama that it's considered to be. And so many people get stuck in, oh, it's just a costume drama. And I watch many costume dramas. I enjoy costume dramas. However, I think that there are lots of costume dramas that do not have nearly the amount of facets that Outlander does. And that's part of why I love this. And when I read scenes like that are so fully fleshed out, I'm like, ugh. This is like a writer's dream/nightmare because it is fleshed out. They have very little to do to make it fleshed out, but they have to cut it, which has to be like the worst ever.
I want that scene complete. I don't want them to cut it.
But I don't want to be the dude in charge of like cutting stuff. That's awful.
Oh, I know. It's too much. Oh my gosh. It was an unusual wedding, Claire tells us. They were going to do it that evening and have one, so to give the bride and groom one private night ashore.
I think that she should have chosen a better adjective. Unusual was not enough. Hysterical.
Hysterical. Oh my gosh. I usually like will write LOL in my notes after something that's like after a paragraph, after something that pops up and is funny. After like every line, I wrote that because it's so yeah. ridiculous. This priest is going to be my favorite character of season three, I think.
For real, my aunt, I love her. My aunt was the officiant at my wedding and she did an amazing job. But after reading this chapter, I wish that this dude had officiated the wedding. We were divorced, so it really didn't matter who officiated in the long run because it didn't last. However, it would have been way more memorable had some dude asked whether or not my bridegroom had a cock. That would have been amazing.
Oh, Lord. Don't steal my thunder, yo.
Okay, thunder, so, not stolen.
Jamie and Claire were there, as were Murphy and Maitland, the witnesses. Now, they were chosen because to at least try and put... I mean, look, Larry's not going to be happy no matter what, but if Claire... were a witness, that would not have gone down well. And Stern would have made a wonderful witness, but he's not a Christian, let alone Catholic. And Claire, not so hot in Larry's eyes. So once Larry found out about it, at least she couldn't object to the witnesses. So Jamie had told Marsali that she must write her mom informing her of the wedding. And so that was the one agreement that she had to make. So the wedding was on the beach. There are torches lit and Father Fogden was there wafting away of sangria, which I love. If we had had time, which I didn't, if I had read ahead, I would have known. But again, I haven't read this for a year or so. And I took notes really, really recently. So if we had had like a theme drink or a drink that we all drank tonight, it would have been sangria.
Oh, for sure.
So the ceremony opens.
Sadly, I don't have any sangria.
Father Fogden asks Murphy, "Wilt thou take this woman?" To which he answers, "No, I don't hold with women. Messy things." Oops. So, okay, that's the first mistake he makes. He asked the wrong man.
Can we talk about the fact that he repeatedly expected Fergus to prove he was a man?
But we haven't got there yet.
I know, but at no point required
the others
Marsley to prove she was a woman.
Yeah, okay.
That's all I'm saying.
And then he turns to Maitland, and Maitland's like, "Not me, sir. No, not that anyone wouldn't be pleased. Him, please." And he points to Fergus. And he says, "Him? You're sure? He hasn't a hand. Won't she mind?" Marsali replies, "I will not." And the priest continues, "Well, I don't suppose it's an impediment. It's not as though he'd lost his cock. I mean, he hasn't, has he?" I just wrote, LOL, I can't. This is like, and this is actually tame. It gets, oh my gosh, he just keeps going. It's like an avalanche, he just keeps going. Jamie goes up and points out the man and woman to be married. And the priest asks for names. Jamie's like, "I've had it. We need to get this going." So he's like, "Look, this one and this one." And here's more evidence that at least in the book, it's three syllables to Marsali. Diana spells it out with dashes. MARSALI. If it's Marsley, you don't pronounce the A, or it's kind of swallowed.
I feel like the way that you spelled it, it should be Marsley. Marsley.
Marsley.
Because if she'd wanted Marsali, I feel like she would have made Saw have a capital letter.
But nothing had a capital except the first letter.
I know, but if she was trying to emphasize the fact that that was where you hit it, I feel like she would have emphasized.
But she wasn't doing it phonetically with other letters than the word. She was literally spelling it the name as if this name was spelled. It just happens to be somewhat phonetic.
She didn't spell it the way that it was spelled. It was MARSALY.
It was spelled phonetically.
It was not maybe phonetic according to your dictionary.
L-E-E.
Yeah. I'm turning to it right now.
L-E-E.
But it was not spelled...
Yeah, I think if she'd wanted it to be Marsali, yeah, she would have put S-A-H.
The point is, it's three syllables. If it's Marsley, that's two syllables. Marsley. Well, and then the A is kind of skipped.
Perhaps they say parsley.
Summer.
In Scotland. You don't know. You don't know what they say. There you go. Parsley.
They do in the South.
So maybe it's Marsley.
Yep. Parsley is three syllables in the South.
Most That's things funny. Are.
When she says, basically, do you, Marsali quickly interrupts and says, interrupts the priest and says, I do. So the priest turns to Fergus and says, you have a name too? And a cock? Oh, Lord. So Jamie puts in, Fergus is like, yes, it's just Fergus. It's just Fergus. And Jamie puts in Fraser. Fergus, Fraser. Fergus, Claudel, Fraser. And at this, Fergus is like, he's speechless. He is amazed. And he's shocked. But he repeats the name to the priest with pride.
Oh my God, who got choked up? I got choked up.
Me too.
I got super choked up. I was like, he's claiming him in front of people.
Every time.
Every time. So Fergus says that he will take her. And he takes out a ring. And then they were wed.
Who's surprised? Where did he get a gold ring?
Oh, in Scotland before they left. That's what she said.
I know, but I mean, is he a man of enough dower to have money to buy a gold ring? I mean, I was surprised he had a ring at all. There are many, many. I mean, that is a luxury to have a ring for your wife.
He should have a share of the profits from the smuggling. True.
But I don't ever, they never strike me as rich people, ever. So, and that, the ring to me feels like a luxury. So to be able to provide her with not only a ring, but a gold ring seems a lot. I was kind of like shocked/impressed.
I bet it's a really thin gold ring.
Yeah. Don't bite it. It will like disintegrate.
You'll bite it in half. As Claire watches the wedding, she thinks about her own choices to take Jamie. She had decided, I want him three times, twice at Crane Dun and once at Lallybroch. Now, when Jamie asks her what she's thinking about, she says, what I tell you three times is true. And she kisses him.
Thank you for illustrating that, because I want you to know that when I read it the first time, I was like, said it three times. She didn't say it three times. When did she say anything three times? And then you just saying that made it make sense to me.
Okay, good.
I was like, wait, huh?
Anne S. writes, the most beautiful part of this chapter is when Jamie gives Fergus his name, Fergus Claudel Fraser. It's as if the marriage with the priest in front of the crew was not to sanctify the marriage of Marsali and Fergus, but to bless the true relationship between long devoted Jamie and Fergus as that of what it truly is. Not one of servant and master, but a father and son. Now let the tear prickles begin.
Ah, boo.
TV side note. The season 3 trailer, we have our first deviation from the TV show. We see Claire and Frank proudly watching Brianna graduate at what had to be at least high school. In the book, Frank dies one semester before, but that's before college, not high school.
It totally could have been a kindergarten graduation. I've been to one of those.
In the book, Frank dies one semester before after threatening to take Bree to London to keep her away from Joe's son and those people. Well, he threw that out there, but we still don't know exactly why he did it. He threw a lot of things out there. A truly low moment for Book Frank as a husband, father, and a not decent person. So clearly they are treating the chain of events differently. Now, yeah, you're right. It could have been a middle school. It could have been a sixth grade. We just don't know. Maybe that's different. Maybe not. However, Book Frank, again, now we have not asked Diana this, and I do hope to one day, but Book Frank
is a douchebag.
Oh, well, he's Book Frank is Book Frank. But after when we started the Voyager read along, we did the chapter of the night that he dies. I'm sorry. It clicked for me. Like I was reading carefully, closely, trying to maybe read too much into it. And I am just noting that Diana's like describing his facial expressions and when she says certain things, and he beats her to the punch. Like he's making faces before she says anything. And it's like, dude, Frank, you're trying to piss her off somehow. You're trying to like deviate or, you know, throw, what do you call it? When you throw something over to the right to get someone's attention over there.
He's trying misdirection.
He is trying to make her think. She already thinks he had the affair, right? Or multiple, whatever.
We all think he had the affair.
My point is, he's in the book, Summer, it's the two of them in one scene. She thinks he had the affair.
He's
feeding that. He's not denying it, but no, he's feeding it. He's like, well, that's what you think. I'm going to take her. And, you know, he doesn't deny it, but he.
I'm with you on that. What I will say is that.
There's way too much there to make it
there
simple.
There is way too much there. But Book Frank, again, I care very little for. And I continue to care very little for the way that he's been written. Now, when this What Frank Knew book comes out, I may feel very differently about Frank. But as far as Book Frank is concerned, I don't care about him. All I care about is her getting back to Jamie from any time I ever read the books. This whole read through since the show has begun, and we've had more exposure to Frank and Tobias Menzies as Frank, I feel like my opinions of Frank have perhaps softened. But at the end of the day, I still think Book Frank is kind of a dick. And until they give me the book that shows that he was doing this in a way to save everyone and to try to protect people, I'm still going to think he's a dick.
Okay, well, let's go back off of Frank because Frank's not in this chapter. So Anne was giving us a side note and we got on the Frank train, which was not our intention. So Eileen P. writes, yay, Jamie has officially adopted Fergus by giving him his surname. Welcome, Fergus Claudel Fraser. Happy tears. I love that Claire has an appreciation of Marsali. She acknowledges that this strong-willed 15-year-old girl has done it. She has endured and survived all obstacles to be with the man she wants. She has married Fergus. Everyone rejoice. And Joe B. writes, Fergus gets the blessing he is needed and the marriage is completed. Both Jamie and Fergus know the depth of feeling and the relationship has been between them for so long. But this is the formal adoption, a public declaration of Fergus as his son. A son he can claim in contrast to Willie. Now, after this time of separation, Claire reaffirms her vows to Jamie and together they face worlds unknown. Lisa T. writes, Claire recognizes a kindred spirit in Marsali. Marsali was willing to travel 3,000 miles to be with Fergus, just like Claire was willing to travel 200 years in time to be with Jamie. Despite the incredible odds, both of them are with their loves.
Dude, you know what? The one statement that Claire makes at this chapter that makes me 100% be on Marsali's side is that when she was like, the slip of a girl was just like, I want him. That's it. I don't care what you think. I want him. I'll do whatever it takes to have him and make him mine. Screw all of you. Screw propriety. Screw everything else you're putting in my path. I want him. I will make it happen. And that moment is where I kind of get on her side. Now, it was a little wavery when she was in the cabin with Claire a couple chapters ago, and she's like, I don't like you, you're kind of a whore, but I'm gonna ask you questions about how to not have babies. But when Claire brings it back home and says that, you know, Marsali was like, I want him, and then just stuck it out and made it happen, she totes earned my respect. Totally.
Martina P. writes, the moment Claire becomes Mother Claire to Marsali is very endearing to me. How adorable that Claire is the one who is getting Marsali ready for her wedding. It is even more powerful because she was so hostile toward Claire and hated by her mother, Leary. I so enjoy this moment, not unlike another one that is coming up. One just has to respect that young girl who did it with pure stubbornness through 3,000 miles of heartache and homesickness to get what she wants. She wants Fergus and she shall have him.
Have we thought about the fact? Do we think that leg hair resents her children?
No, I always felt like she loved her children.
I never got that. Maybe I just don't feel like we ever got a full picture of leg hair with her children and how she felt about them. But I don't know that I ever felt that she resented them. I feel like she loved them and cared for them. I don't think that her children were not cared for because she resented what their fathers did to her. Am I the only one there?
Did I say the word resent?
You didn't say resent, but something you said kind of made it sound like she found something in Claire she didn't find in her mother. which was kind of an acceptance thing. But I never got that her mother didn't care for her or love her in a way that made her feel
okay.
Loved.
It is even more powerful because she was so hostile toward Claire, Leary was, and hated by her mother, Leary. Claire was hated by her mother, Leary. Marsaldi wasn't hated by her mother.
I totally probably misunderstood that.
A lot of those pronouns were thrown around, so it's hard to keep track of who, he, she, it, we, they.
We're doing good, you guys. We're doing good. Keep it up.
During the description of the wedding ceremony, I had to laugh out loud a couple times. Father Fogden managed as well as he could, being stoned and all. I'm just surprised that Jamie was able to keep it together. Father Fogden lost complete focus when he set his eye upon a sheep that appeared in the scene. Oh, Lord. Claire's reflection during the wedding ceremony is so beautiful and a reaffirmation of their powerful bond. Lastly, what puts a tear in my eye is when Jamie gives Fergus the Fraser name. Another very powerful and absolutely wonderful moment, and it makes Fergus and myself so happy that he finally gets this recognition.
I want you to know that if at any point in my life, James Fraser said to me when I was trying to tell someone my name and he recreated my name but changed my last name to Fraser, I would also bust into tears spontaneously. So I think Claudel is totally justified in his reaction. All right. Well, you guys, that was part 8. It's done. We are moving on to part 9. And hopefully there are way more awkward scenes for Ginger to narrate. Part 9 is
I'm good. I think I've outdone myself.
That was super fun. Again, MVP, Lisa T.
You did a good job reading it, Ginger.
All right. Part 9, Worlds Unknown. We'll begin that next episode with Bat Guano.
So what I was trying to say to Mandy when she said, you did that well, Ginger. Are you trying to give me like a hint? Are you trying to say that I need to read like stuff like that?
No, I'm trying to say you should drink more whiskey.
I barely had like one, barely had a shot.
Don't justify this. Just accept it and make it part of your routine.
No, I just thought you read it very well.
She did.
Thank you.
Like, I'm not going to lie, though, when you mentioned shift and sucking her nipples through them, I almost fell on the floor. Because it was the most amazing thing. Because it was the most amazing thing I'd ever heard come out of your mouth.
You're a nut, Summer.
I'm definitely something. I don't know if nut is what I'd go with, but I'll go with nut.
Okay. Well, Mandy, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
So, Mandy, was the chapter everything you thought it would be?
It was everything I thought it would be and more. I'm glad to know that other people love it as much as I do.
I'm glad to know that other people love to hear Ginger reciting sexy things out
Summer.
Loud as much as I do. That's what I wanted to say.
And we wonder why I'm still single. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. Lisa T, for real, if I wasn't already following you on everything social media and Facebook related, I would do that right now because you are my queen.
Lisa, you have a huge fan in Summer. Oh, my gosh. Oh, and Mandy, apparently.
It was awesome. I mean, cannot deny that was amazing.
You're too much. Like, okay.
Suck on your nipples through your shift again. Can you say that one more time?
Summer, no. I don't do it for fun. Okay. Thank you, Mandy, for joining us. And thank you, Summer, for joining us. Me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ginger.
Thank you.
For reading all the listener comments in a way that was meaningful for me.
Oh, especially Lisa. And thank you, Lisa. Apparently, you're really appreciated this week. And thank you, everyone, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod. My young love.